The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from TeenVogue.com and KidSpiritOnline.com. Our first article today from KidSpiritOnline.com, Going with the Flow. This article was written by Jack Green on November 18th. Flow, Director Gintz Zibilatis, Dreamwell Studio, 2024. Running time, 85 minutes. Rating, 4 stars. Life can change in the blink of an eye. When it does, we have two choices. Adapt to the current and keep moving, or stay stuck in our ways and fall to the floods of flux. Director Gintz Zibilatis did a great job of representing this idea in his 2024 animated film, Flow. This film details the life of a black cat along his journeys after a flood of colossal proportions changes the world as he knows it. He befriends an unlikely, to say the least, crew of animals, predators and prey alike, and they all struggle for survival in the new world, cooped up in a boat together. I found this to be an extremely moving take on the way we respond to adversity. The demonstration of natural enemies finding common ground to use their skills and all contribute to shared goals is both realistic and relatable for humans. The theme of uniting to survive against adversity added another layer to the film, and its relatability helped keep the movie interesting. Another prevalent theme of this movie is the importance of adapting to one's surroundings. If the cat arrived in the boat and tried to go about his life the same way, sleeping in a comfortable bed, hiding from other animals, and scavenging for food, he would not have the slightest chance at survival. However, the cat is able to change his ways, sleeping in the sheltered spots of the boat, allying himself with predators, and catching fish from the schools underwater. Ultimately, these changes allow him to thrive even when his life is uprooted. This is a powerful message that I feel all people around the world should follow for a more successful and happier life. Adapting to changes around oneself, rather than staying stuck, allows people to move forward. Furthermore, choosing to adopt new lifestyles and make the most of your situation can do wonders for mental health and happiness. Dwelling on unfortunate facts that we can't change only has the effect of making us needlessly distressed and unhappy. Whereas looking on the bright side and accepting the situation often yields positive results. This idea reminded me of an important concept in Buddhism, impermanence. Impermanence is one of the central concepts of Buddhism, which allows practitioners to recognize that all circumstances are temporary, and therefore, all reactions to external circumstances are temporary too. In theory, this idea and the idea that suffering is caused by wishing for things to be different than how they are allows practitioners of Buddhism to accept unchangeable facts as they are and make the most of them. Accepting these facts, regardless of religion or whether you're a cat, bird, capybara, or human, can lift a great strain off of one's mental health. Flow is a prime example of ripple effects and how everything is connected. It is only natural that such a large event like the flood would change many environmental factors and change the circumstances of those affected. For example, the flood causes the cat to need the boat, which causes him to meet the capybara and other animals. This leads to his accepting predators as allies, and ultimately changes his life even after the waters go down. This is the very definition of the ripple effect, and seeing the way each part of the movie is connected is one of the most endearing points of the film. Another very endearing aspect of the movie is the style of animation. The creators used a watercolor-like style with enough realism to get the point across and enough artistic license to convey mood. Along with being very aesthetically pleasing, slight changes in things such as lighting or color emphasized the fear, wonder, and or shock the cat is experiencing. One point in the film that I feel perfectly encapsulates this point is when the cat is fishing in the flooded waters. The scene is full of vibrant colors and lighting that hasn't yet been seen, which does an incredible job of showing the cat's curiosity and wonder, while also being a beautiful, colorful scene that wouldn't look out of place in a prestigious art museum. The director's decision not to use music and dialogue was also a great asset to the feel of this movie. Animal noises added a degree of realism that talking animals couldn't hope to match, but also add a layer of personality to the animals. The tones can clearly be heard as fearful, content, or another emotion. This is especially apparent as their noises seem to mirror their relationships, starting cautious, but growing friendly and cooperative. Using animal sounds rather than dialogue helps the animals' authenticity, making their emotions feel more real and easier to connect with. Possibly even more importantly, the lack of dialogue makes the film more universal. Choosing not to put one language on the film allows everyone to experience it in its original form, and prevents labels such as a Latvian movie or French movie. It is unique that the audience's experience has the potential to be as universal as the film's message is. Overall, this movie is both moving and entertaining, and earns a 4-star rating. I really enjoyed the animation style and music choices. The writers did a wonderful job of getting viewers to empathize with characters, and the movie is, for the most part, very captivating. I also enjoyed the fact that there are man-made structures, but no people or dialogue. The reason this movie lost a point is because I wouldn't choose it as a casual or just for fun watch. The lack of dialogue, while an interesting and overall smart stylistic choice, and the inclusion of many little details and brief slow periods, makes the movie one you really have to pay attention to while watching. However, this is still an incredible movie with a great concept and very family-friendly. For these reasons, I strongly recommend it for any age. Our next article from KidSpiritOnline.com, My Path. This article was written by Antonella Paniagua Salinas on September 24th. A decision I thought was the right one triggered a series of outcomes that nearly brought down some of the most important pieces of my life. In my short experiences making friends, most, if not all, friendships haven't lasted long. When you reach the point where no friendship you've made has lasted, it's inevitable to think, am I the problem? And yes, I could say I was responsible for my friendships often not lasting due to a lack of maturity, reacting impulsively, and being guided by my emotions, all of which only worsened the conflict and ended that bond of friendship. This was always a painful process for me, affecting me both mentally and physically, as I had to deal with a lot of stress and headaches, which was very draining for me. Those experiences undoubtedly left their mark on me. So, influenced by the personal development content I was consuming, and with the goal of healing and finding myself, I decided to take some time for myself. I focused on being the best version of myself and feeling good about myself, and I had confidence that eventually the right people would appear in my life because we attract what we are. I was determined to heal and break the pattern of unstable friendships, but I got lost along the way. At first, everything was going well. I was able to focus on different aspects of my life, which helped me improve and gave me the opportunity to discover more about myself. However, without realizing it, I neglected my social life, and I began to feel lonely, especially at school. I would eat snacks alone and watch my classmates share and laugh while I sat in the corner. The desire for connection grew stronger and stronger. Unintentionally, I had disconnected from the people around me. I had stopped seeking out those connections, thinking it was the best thing to do. But I was unaware that I was slowly building a deep loneliness inside me, which affected my social skills. I was becoming a more insecure and withdrawn person who began to give too much importance to what others thought. Time passed, and it was time to start a new stage of my education, high school. At first, I had high expectations. I felt that starting high school was an opportunity to make new friends, and I was very excited about the idea. My goal was to prepare for admission to the computer science department. I was sure that by doing so, I would have a better chance of making new friends, since enrolling in the program requires taking an exam. And there are always many students from other institutions who take it and become new students. During the admissions process, I encountered many obstacles. The course schedule to study for the exams was exhausting. I began to have vision problems. My performance deteriorated. I simply struggled to focus. And I knew if I continued like this, I wouldn't be able to achieve my goals. And this discouraged me greatly. Exam day arrived, and in the end, after thinking about it, or rather overthinking it, I decided not to apply and stuck with my second choice, a program where I didn't need to take an exam and where most of my classmates would be enrolled. I wasn't satisfied. I regretted several times having chosen that option, of not having had the courage to try what I wanted. This situation was my breaking point. The illusion of making new friends had vanished. For weeks, I struggled with a deep sense of emptiness in my life, which led to depression. I didn't know how to deal with what I was feeling until I finally asked for psychological help. In that moment, I felt a mix of fear and relief. Fear because I was stepping into the unknown, unsure of what therapy would uncover. And relief because I was no longer carrying the weight entirely on my own. It was as if I had been standing at the edge of a dark forest for weeks and finally decided to take the first step inside, guided by someone who knew the way. Little by little, I progressively improved. I better understood the causes that led me to that point, how the experiences I'd lived through influenced my mental health, and had led me to develop a defense mechanism of distancing myself from others as a way to protect myself from all the failed friendships I'd had. Asking for help became more than just a decision. It was a turning point. It was the moment I stopped letting my pain quietly dictate my life and started learning how to live with openness again, one small step at a time. Without a doubt, having been alone and disconnected from others for so long left me with wounds that I'm still healing. But despite that, as I slowly emerged from that abyss I found myself in, I learned that I am the only person who can save me by loving and accepting myself, and that I am much stronger than I think. It took me a long time to accept that I wasn't well, to be vulnerable, and to open up and express what I felt, but that helped me to truly heal. Now I'm sure that if I ever get lost again along the way, I'll always find myself again. Just like ripples in water, the choice I made in that single moment of courage continues to spiral outward, shaping my relationships, my self-worth, and the way I hope to touch the lives of others. Making the decision to ask for help not only helped me understand myself and my emotions better, I also discovered one of the most important lessons in life. I learned to value the people around me more and be more compassionate with others, because we never know what internal battles each person is fighting behind the mask they show to the world. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Alice Wong, disability justice advocate and author, dies at 51. This article was written by Sarah Luderman of the 19th on November 19th. And there is a note. This article was first published by the 19th. Alice Wong, a visionary leader in disability justice and culture, died from an infection on November 14th in San Francisco. She was 51. In a message shared on social media by friend and fellow activist Sandy Ho, Wong wrote, "Hi everyone, it looks like I ran out of time. I have so many dreams that I wanted to fulfill, and plans to create new stories for you. There are a few in progress that might come to fruition in a few years if things work out. I did not ever imagine I would live to this age and end up a writer, editor, activist, and more." Wong is best known for her work on the Disability Visibility Project, which she founded to magnify disabled culture, particularly the work and lives of those who are multiply marginalized, disabled women of color, LGBTQ+ people, and immigrants. Wong was born on March 27, 1974, in Indianapolis. Her parents, Henry and Bobby Wong, had immigrated to the United States from Hong Kong 2 years earlier. She was diagnosed at birth with spinal muscular atrophy, a progressive neuromuscular disease that slowly weakened her muscles, including the muscles in her lungs that she needed to breathe. Doctors told her parents that she wouldn't live past 18. As her disability progressed, Wong acquired more mechanical support. She conceptualized herself as a disabled cyborg and the advancement of her condition as cyborg turning points in her 2022 memoir, The Year of the Tiger. I am a disabled cyborg that has gone through another series of augmentations that extended her life until another system fails, she told The Guardian earlier this year. One of Wong's more recent cyborg components was the use of text-to-speech software after she lost the ability to speak. She became an advocate for people who use augmentative and alternative communication through her work on the Advisory Council for Communication First, a nonprofit dedicated to protecting and advancing the rights of non-speakers, as well as others who cannot rely on speech alone to be understood. In 2013, then-President Barack Obama appointed Wong to the National Council on Disability, an independent agency that advises the federal government and Congress on disability policy. In 2015, she became the first person to visit the White House by robot telepresence, as she was not able to travel, to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The Disability Visibility Project began in 2014 as an oral history project in cooperation with StoryCorps, a nonprofit that collects, preserves, and shares stories of everyday people. Over 100 interviews are now housed at the Library of Congress. She wrote multiple books, a column for Teen Vogue, and more. Editors note, her Teen Vogue column included a widely read 2024 essay advocating for the importance of wearing masks, especially amid COVID-19 cases. One of her final projects was Crips for eSIMS for Gaza, which she co-founded with writers Jane Shee and Leah Lakshmi Piepsna Samarasena. They raised over $3 million to help connect people living in Gaza to the internet and the rest of the world. In 2024, Wong was awarded a MacArthur Genius Grant for her contributions to disability activism and culture. That same year, Wong wrote about turning 50 for Time. The average lifespan for someone with her condition grew throughout her lifetime as new technologies and treatments emerged, but she was aware she had limited time from a very young age. According to Wong, it shaped the way she lived. Death remains my intimate shadow partner. It has been with me since birth, always hovering close by. I understand one day we will finally waltz together into the ether. I hope when that time comes, I die with the satisfaction of a life well lived, unapologetic, joyful, and full of love, she said. In addition to her parents, Wong is survived by her younger sisters, Emily and Grace Wong. Disclosure: Sarah Luderman completed a contract to write a plain language edition of Alice Wong's first book in 2019. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Bright gave the Canadian tuxedo a twist at F1 Grand Prix 2025. This article was written by Donya Mominian on December 8th. By now it's clear that F1 and fashion go hand in hand. Don't believe us yet? Let Bright convince you instead. The Thai actor attended the F1 Grand Prix 2025 in Abu Dhabi and showed out with a fitting look. Attending with Ferrari, Bright was styled in a casual, cool look as seen in his Instagram post. He wore a jeans and a matching jacket with an acid wash finish for a distressed feel. Keeping it simple yet trendy, he layered the denim jacket over a simple white top that just barely peeked out and zipped it all the way to the top. Juxtaposing the baggy silhouette and acid wash of the set that gave the look a comfy and chill vibe, he opted for ultra-polished and sleek loafers, dressing the outfit up a little. To accessorize, he went with a pair of thin black sunglasses, perhaps a callback to the 90s eyewear trend, given denim on denim was similarly somewhat of a uniform in that era. Bright is no stranger to using jeans as a wardrobe staple. Earlier this year, he donned a classic pair with a leather jacket while out and about on a trip to Paris. Then, he similarly put a twist on the look by pairing it with a statement shoe. For that, he went with the very trendy Adidas Taekwondo sneakers. So, this latest look is just a testament to his penchant for mixing and matching aesthetics. While the F1 track might not be the typical venue that comes to mind for fashion, it quickly is becoming another go-to destination to flex one's personal style. Notably, Ferrari driver Lewis Hamilton has helped establish that, with his pre-match looks and crossovers into fashion, like being a chair for the 2025 Met Gala. F1 Academy driver Alba Larson is similarly making her way in both the racing and fashion worlds at once. She currently serves as a brand ambassador for Tommy Hilfiger. Other celebs attending the races have also taken the opportunity to show off their style. In the past, Blackpink's Rosé leaned into the F1 aesthetic, and fellow group member Lisa brought the thin scarf trend to the tracks. And as F1 continues to draw people in, more is sure to come. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919 833